I want to talk to you this morning about, we've done a series, this is our last week on it, on the path to our purpose. And so I've said this every week, but I really want it to resonate with you that it's been said the two most important days of our life are the day that we're born and the day we discover why. In other words, why am I here? And so there are two areas that I love to speak about. One is identity. There's such confusion in our culture today about identity in so many areas. And actually, it's been something that the devil has done from the beginning. In the garden, he tried to do it with Adam and Eve. And in the wilderness, he tried to do it with Jesus. Now, he was successful with Adam and Eve. He got them to doubt their identity. And so that's where they made their, that's when they stepped into sin. With Jesus, he didn't doubt his identity. And so he stood strong against temptation. The other is, discovering your purpose. Because I know in our life that if we ever find out what God's yes for us is, that it burns bright in our heart, that it makes it easier for us to say no to certain things. One of the reasons why some people have a hard time saying no to certain things is because they don't know what their yes is. And so we have to discover what our yes is, and we find that out through God. So I talked for a few weeks there, and the first week I talked about how, the first part of discovering our yes is to become a Jesus follower. The minute you begin to follow Jesus, he begins to reveal to you what it is that he's called you to do. That when he said to his disciples, he said, look, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. And then we talked the next week about, once we begin to follow him and begin to discover what he's made us to be, the second thing is that we surrender or give him access to the things that we believe are ours, the things that we have control of. We say, Jesus, you control this. It's yours. You have access to it. Now I'll do with it what you want. And then last week we talked about how we serve. And as we serve, it gets us on a path where God begins to steer us the direction that he wants us to go. I want to talk to you today about one of the seasons that we spend most of our time in, and it's probably the hardest season, and that's the season that when you feel invisible, you feel unseen. And that's a very difficult time in our life because when you feel invisible, the devil offers shortcuts. He tries to get you to take shortcuts, it's very challenging in that season. I want to begin in Matthew chapter 3. Open up your Bibles to Matthew chapter 3. If you're still learning your way around the Bible, there's an Old and a New Testament. And so the New Testament begins with Matthew. Matthew was a Jesus follower. Matter of fact, before he was a Jesus follower, he was a tax collector, and everybody disliked tax collectors. I mean, the religious people disliked him, the non-religious people, but Jesus called him, and Matthew's story was changed. And so he began to be a Jesus follower, one of the disciples, and he wrote this eyewitness account of Jesus. So in Matthew chapter 3, verse 13, it says this, then Jesus went from Galilee to the Jordan River to be baptized by John. But John tried to talk him out of it. I am the one who needs to be baptized by you, he said. So why are you coming to me? But Jesus said, it should be done, for we must carry out all that God requires. So John agreed to baptize him. After his baptism, as Jesus came up out of the water, the heavens were opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and settling on him. And a voice from heaven said, this is my dearly loved Son who brings me great joy. Now, I want us to think about context. When you look at Matthew chapter 1, it really talks about the birth of Jesus, and Matthew chapter 2 goes into that some as well. In Luke, it does the same thing, but it talks about a moment where Jesus was 12 and his parents took him to the temple, and at 12 he has that. But those are really the only biological accounts we have of Jesus until this moment right here. We think he was somewhere around 30 years old then, give or take a year or two, and that he did ministry for the next 3 years. And so let's say for about 90% of his life that to humanity, he was for the most part unknown, anonymous. And his calling was invisible to most people. Well, he has this moment. You can see John the Baptist came and his purpose was to prepare the way for the Messiah. And so he began to preach repentance. In other words, anything, any sin that's in your life, anything that's in the way of what God wants to do, repent, turn away from it, give God access to your life. And so people began to come and hear that message, and he challenged them, and they were convicted. And so he begins to baptize them, and it was their way of showing, hey, look, we've repented of our sin. Well, there's this line of people and Jesus gets in it. And again, probably to many people, they had no idea who he was. That here in this line, just like everybody else, not standing out, not noticed, is the Messiah. And he'd been the Messiah for 30 years. But he wasn't revealed yet. And so he waits his turn. He goes through the line. He comes up to John the Baptist. John the Baptist knows who he is. And he says, look, I shouldn't be baptizing you. You should be baptizing me. And Jesus said, no, it's supposed to be this way. Let righteousness be fulfilled. And so in that moment when he was baptized, then the Father revealed to John the Baptist and to those that heard, this is my son whom I'm well pleased. In other words, it was the beginning of his revealing, the beginning of his no longer being anonymous or invisible or isolated. But 90% of his life was that, well, why does God do that? Why is so much of our life seem to be waiting and doing before we experience? Well, here's the first thing. Number one is this, is that this is where we become rooted in our faith. That we become rooted in that. You know, they said this about icebergs, that most icebergs, only 10% of them stand above the water. 90% are beneath the surface. And it's wild to think, as big as an iceberg looks, that most of it's not seen. And yet the thing that makes it almost indestructible is not the 10% above water, but the 90% that's under. Now it's interesting that the minute that Jesus did this, that's the end of chapter 3. And chapter 4, verse 1 starts out with this. Then after Jesus was revealed, then after Jesus was taken out of being anonymity, then Jesus was led by the Spirit in the wilderness to be tempted there by the devil. Why then? Because he was ready. He was ready to deal with that temptation. He was ready to face it. His faith was rooted. Man, there's just something about this period again, this season again. It's so difficult. It's so hard because we can feel unseen and we can get impatient. And again, the devil offers shortcuts. Well, you should do it this way. And again, even though I'm talking about our purpose, it really appeals to so many things or applies to so many things in our life. Like you may be wanting to get married and you're like, when is that person gonna come along? And somebody shows up and in your heart, you know, they're not quite right. But the devil's like, well, you know, nobody else is asking you out. I didn't expect so much laughter on that statement. It almost sounded like nervous laughter from some people. But there's just something about that time that it just becomes difficult. And so, but this is so connected to God's timing. We can't get in a hurry. We can't get in a hurry. When I was a kid, you know, like still living at home in my mid-teens, both my parents worked, and in the summer, I cooked my own meals, all right? And so, yeah, I did, man. I made fish sticks, pizza, Jell-O, that kind of thing. And so, took me a while for Jell-O. But anyway, so there would be times where I would see pizza and you know, there was a pier to there where we didn't have a microwave. You're like, because you're poor? No, because we were old and they weren't around at that time. So anyway, and so, you know, it would like, you know, cook this pizza for 30 minutes at 300 degrees or whatever the temperature was. And I used to wonder, like, well, if I could cook it at 30 minutes at 300 degrees, if I put it at 500 degrees, could I cook it shorter? And so, but I never did because I didn't have any confidence that I wouldn't catch the house on fire. And I knew me that I was not sacrificing my life for the house. And I probably thought I would get in trouble if I burned the house down. So anyway, so yesterday I was kind of thinking about that. And I looked it up and I thought, what would happen if you try to cook a pizza, you know, at higher temperature and quicker? And this is what they said, that you could undercook the crust. The dough may not have enough time to rise and crisp up properly. It'd be soggy and doughy, or, you know, that kind of thing, especially in the middle. Also, the cheese and the toppings might not melt or brown properly, and the toppings, like vegetables or meats, might be undercooked or lack flavor since they haven't had time to cook. And the overall texture of the pizza may not develop the desired crispy crust or evenly cooked toppings, leading to a less enjoyable texture. In short, rushing the cooking time usually results in a less satisfying pizza, both in terms of flavor and texture. And so to know this, that's where God begins to plant us. Now, so there's a work that he's doing in all of us. And I think about that time. I think about those things that he does in us. I think about different stories in here about what God's done. I've got permission from Coach Key to tell this story. I love this story that years ago, he came to Claremore, I think, or he started coaching at Claremore about a year before we started Cedar Point Church. And so we started feeding the zebras and feeding the eagles and feeding the Cardinals, other teams in the area. I remember him and the coaching staff would show up, and Coach Key's he's noticeable. You know, I mean, you can tell he spent some time in the weight room and that kind of thing, probably played college ball and that kind of thing. He has a college jersey on today with the school he played for. And so I remember, I recognized him. Well, we had a guy named Wayne McCombs before he passed. He led a Bible study called Coach's Outreach. And one morning he said, "Hey, man, do you want to go speak to him?" I said, "Man, I'd love that. I love sports. Almost went into coaching. I'd love to speak to coaches. I get them." And so, they won't be excited about the preacher showing up, but I'm bringing donuts. Tell them that. They'll be there. And so I brought donuts. And on my way there, I'd had something prepared, but I felt like the Lord dealing with me, "I don't want you to talk about that. I want you to talk about this." And I said, "Man, Lord, you could have told me this yesterday. It would have been so much easier had you told me yesterday." So anyway, I got there and I did what the Lord wanted me to do. And after the meeting, I didn't know this at the time, but he went and he called his wife, Melanie, and he said, "Hey, man, I know we're going to church Sunday. That thing we were talking about last night, the preacher was here and said the Lord changed his message on the way here. And he did it for us. I know that it spoke to us." So that Sunday, for the first time, Coach Key and his wife showed up to church here. And I was so excited, man, to see them. They're just great people. And at that time, the church was smaller, so I would take out a guest bag to first-time visitors. Now, if you're a visitor today, don't worry. I don't do that anymore. And even though this back then, I didn't go in the house. I mean, there's a few times where somebody would be like, "Well, if we're not good enough for you to come in our house, we're not good enough to go to church. Okay, I'll come in." But I knew most of the time people did not, when you show up, they're like, "Oh, dear Lord, the preacher's here." So I mean, I know they want me to come in. Well, I pulled up to his house and the garage door's open and I'm in the church van and there's no markings on the church van. For all he knows, man, I'm just, I'm some drug lord coming to take revenge on him or something like that. And it looks pretty sketchy. And so I show up there and he's like, "Mel, the preacher's here." "What preacher?" "They lived in Owosla Dime." "The one from Cedar Point." "What am I supposed to do?" And he's looking for a place to put his beer because the preacher's there. And so, I walk in and he seems awfully uncomfortable and I'm like, I wonder why this guy's so, if we got in a fight, he's winning. I don't know why he's uncomfortable, So we talked for a few minutes and that kind of thing. And then, as time went on, we became friends. We were in a men's group together and all that thing. And I just see, now he's our executive pastor, but I see in that season, as God prepared him all along the way, in every one of those things, that his faith got rooted in to where he's in the position that he's in now. That this is such a hard season when you're in it, but it's so necessary. Yeah, go ahead and clap. Give him a hand. Yeah. We laughed about that story the other day. It was just one of those things where it's like, you hardly ever see this guy nervous. What's he going to be nervous about? But I mean, he's like, but it's just connected to God's timing and all of those other things. And so one of the things that takes place in this season is that we become rooted in our faith. Let's look at this second thing here. Go with me, if you would, to 1 Samuel 16. 1 Samuel 16, that's in the Old Testament. 1 Samuel is just like the ninth book of the Bible. So what takes place in this season? I mean, why is it so essential? Why is it such a huge part of our life where we feel, does anybody see me? Is it God? How's this going to happen? Because so many times that the things we pray for or God's calling on our life is connected to people. How are they going to know about me? When is that going to take place? All of those kind of things. When is that going to happen? And so one of the guys in the Old Testament I love reading about is King David. He had, such a fascinating life. And so in 1 Samuel 16 was the day that he was recognized. And so in 1 Samuel 16, Saul had been king and then he just didn't follow God. And so eventually God said he can't be king any longer. And so he told Samuel about that and Samuel had to go tell him. Samuel grieved. He loved Saul. And he was just grieved about, you know, him no longer being king. Well, we'll read verse 1, then we'll go to verse 4. So now the Lord said to Samuel, you've mourned long enough for Saul. Isn't it wild that he just mourned for him? Sometimes people, when they leave our life, their part in our story is done and we mourn about it. And sometimes it's like, you know, it's just they're part of somebody else's story now. And so he said, I've rejected him as king of Israel. So fill your flask with olive oil and go to Bethlehem. Find a man named Jesse who lives there, for I have selected one of his sons to be my king. So Samuel did as the Lord instructed. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town came trembling to meet him. What's wrong, they asked. Do you come in peace? Yes, Samuel replied. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Purify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. Then Samuel performed the purification rite for Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice too. When they arrived, Samuel took one look at Eliab and thought, surely this is the Lord's anointed. So get this. God's called Samuel to anoint one of Jesse's sons as king. So Jesse shows up, all of his sons are invited, and he brings all of them but one. And so the first one, I think, is Eliab. I think he's the oldest. And so he stands before Samuel, and Samuel goes, this is him. Samuel takes one look at him, this is him. And this is what God says. But the Lord said to Samuel, don't judge by his appearance. Let me read that again. Don't judge by his appearance. A lot of churches, man, could stand some time in that sentence right there. Don't judge by his appearance or height, for I have rejected him. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. The Lord doesn't see things the way you see them. People judge by outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Then Jesse told his son Abinadab to step forward and walk in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, this is not the one the Lord has chosen. Next, Jesse summoned Shimeah. But Samuel said, neither is this the one the Lord has chosen. In the same way, all seven of Jesse's sons were presented to Samuel. But Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord has not chosen any of these. Then Samuel asked, are these all the sons you have? Can you imagine being David? That all of your brothers are invited, but you. How would you process that? How would the enemy take advantage of declaring this must be what your worth is, even your own family doesn't value you? He was not just the black sheep of the family, he was apparently the reject of the family. Because all of his brothers were invited, but him. And finally, Samuel's like, is this it? And Jesse told, he said, the Lord has not chosen any of these. Then Samuel asked, are these all the sons you have? They're still the youngest, Jesse replied, but he's out in the fields watching the sheep and goats. Send for him at once, Samuel said. We will not sit down to eat until he arrives. So Jesse sent for him. He was dark and handsome with beautiful eyes. And his dad said, no. And his brother said, no. And the Lord said, this is the one, anoint him. So as David stood there among his brothers, Samuel took the flask of olive oil he had brought and anointed David with the oil. And the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David from that day on. Then Samuel returned to Ramah. Here's the second thing that happens is that during this season, you have to rest in knowing that God sees you. Again, you know, it's hard because you see things taking place around you in other people's lives. Things that you've prayed about for years, and you see other people that they don't seem as ready or they don't seem to have made the sacrifices or the commitments that you've made. And yet, you know, things are happening for them. Doors are opening for them. The devil will come along and say, see, I don't know why you're waiting. Why are you waiting? Why are you being faithful? Why are you doing this? You know, clearly it's just, you know, it's rigged. The system's rigged against you. Even your own family doesn't see the value in you. And you have to understand that all of those are the lies of the enemy to get you to step out of that season, step away from that season, to try to get you to cook that pizza quicker than it's supposed to be. try to get you to step out there and where you end up facing things before you're prepared to face them. This season of being invisible, this season of being anonymous, this season in anonymity is a place where God is growing our faith, that is digging deep in the soil so that we can go through the hard places. Jesus went through that place in the wilderness. At that time, the Spirit led him there because he waited until the Father was ready to reveal him. And so he was ready for that moment. I've said this to my own kids when they were younger. I said, the worse than getting the job you want is getting the job you want before you're ready for it. There's something about that preparation that our flesh gets impatient for. The devil offers up all sorts of counterfeits, all sorts of opportunities, that the opportunity to be offended comes along because you feel unappreciated, taken advantage of. Other people like David's family, they didn't see any worth in him. He was just the guy taking care of the sheep while the important sons showed up. And so in this season of feeling invisible, you have to rest in knowing that God sees you. When David's father didn't even invite him to the meeting, his brothers didn't even say, hey, where's David at? Then when the prophet said, is this it? And his dad said, well, we got the one other, the youngest, he's out there taking care of the sheep, that with him, that it says, the Lord said, this is the one. When you feel overlooked, unappreciated, when it feels like it's never gonna happen, you have to tell yourself, I know the Lord sees me. I know the Lord sees me. Whether anybody else does or not, I know he sees me. He sees the sacrifice. He sees the faithfulness. He sees me. And so again, that part of your life, this season that's so long and so treacherous, because if we give up on it, if we walk away from it, who will notice? But it's necessary so that we're ready for the challenges of that thing that God has called us to, that we begin to experience those. It's just such an important part of God's calling on our life. Can I just be real transparent with you? We started Cedar Point when I was in my mid-40s. And it's one of those things that sometimes I'm like, Lord, why couldn't we have started this when I was 30? He says, remind me, man, what I thought like when I was 30. And I'm not saying that every 30-year-old's like this. I'm talking about me. And what a mess I would have made of things. How many people I would have hurt or wounded. It wasn't that he wasn't ready, as I wasn't ready. And so this season that we're growing in, it's where God plants those roots so that when those hard moments come, that we don't give up. That we stay the course. We may think about it. I remember when I first joined youth ministry, I asked this guy, I'd been in youth ministry for a long time, I said, do you ever think about quitting? And he said, if I moved a mile west, every time I thought about quitting, I'd live in the middle of the Pacific Ocean right now. And I thought, well, that's kind of comforting. But we don't see this as, we just see it as a hard place. We don't see it as a work of God. And that's where the mistake is made, is that we have to realize that God sees us. And this season is on purpose. It's on purpose that there's still things he's doing in us so that when that opportunity arises, when that moment's there, we're ready. We're ready. So the second thing is that rest in knowing that God sees you. Let's look at this last thing. Move over to chapter 17. So David has that moment. Then he has this encounter with Goliath. And Goliath was, he was not only huge, you know, he was a giant. He was way bigger than the other people around him, but he also had a reputation for being a vicious warrior. He wasn't just a big guy. Hey, that guy's pretty big. You know, I mean, he had a reputation of killing people. And so people were afraid of his size and his reputation. And David was like, I can take him. And David was a teenager, and sometimes people think, well, he was just a teenager. He didn't know any better. But David tells us why he knew right here. So in 1 Samuel 17, verse 32, it says this. Don't worry about this Philistine, David told Saul. I'll go fight him. Don't be ridiculous, Saul replied. There's no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy. And he's been a man of war since his youth. But David persisted. I have been taking care of my father's sheep and goats, he said. When a lion or a bear comes to steal a lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue the lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and club it to death. There's nothing soft about that, I'm telling you. I've done this to both lions and bears, and I'll do it to this pagan Philistine too, for he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine. Saul finally consented. All right, go ahead, he said, and may the Lord be with you. In David's season of anonymity, it wasn't inactive. He was taking care of his father's sheep. He was laying down his life for them. It just wasn't on a stage. It just wasn't public. It was hidden. He's being tested. He was being proven. He was being developed. But God was also showing him that he could trust him. He was learning to have confidence in God. The place that God gave him confidence to stand before Goliath was not in public. It was in this invisible season when even his own family didn't see any value in him or any worth in him. It was during that season that he didn't even see any of that. And so right here in this moment as that's taking place, and then, you know, you just see this take place as he says to Saul, he says, I'll beat him because I beat the lion and the bear. Where, in front of everybody? No, out in the wilderness by himself. You know, I know for me, you know, and all of us, what those battles look like in our life, and for, you know, part of my calling is to pastor here. And so when we started the church, there were, you know, you look back and I remember that, you know, the first, you know, when we first started, 40 people, 50 people sometimes showing up. And I parked, as I've shared with you, I parked to the end of the parking lot. And I did it for three reasons. One is because I needed the steps. I needed to get the steps in. It's going to be honest and transparent and vulnerable. Yes, I needed the steps. Two is I wanted to set an example of what position meant here. That position doesn't give us privilege, but it's about purpose. So we were going to have a designated space for me. But then three was an act of faith, because I would say, God, I believe because you're faithful, that there'll be a day that I'll have to park here because the parking lot will be so full. And so it was wild, you know, walking across this empty parking lot, kind of like, you know, through Siberia to get to the 20 or 30 cars that were out here in the space. But it was in that season that God proved himself faithful. Because I looked and I'm like, you know, that, I mean, really didn't have anything going for us. We're just a small group. We were in this building and we fixed it up some, but man, it was so janky back then. Looked like a crack house, man. I mean, it was just one of those things that, you know, I'm sure people showed up and were disappointed, like, there's no drugs? No, man, it's Jesus. So, you know, and so, you know, so it was just one of those things. And so, you know, even now in this season, you know, we've had some years where our growth is 10%, 15%, 20%. And then we have other seasons where it flattens out and the devil will come to me and say, see, God, you're through. You're through. But then when those seasons happen, because I remember when we just had 40 and that God proved himself in those seasons, that even when we have those other seasons, that he speaks through the noise and gives me confidence that he's faithful. It's this season, if you're in that season right now, this is the place where you learn to trust him. So that the storms and challenges that you face, when you step into that place of no longer being invisible, no longer being anonymous, when you step into that place that you know that he sees you, you know that you can trust him. And so he reveals that to us. So number three is that this is where God gives us confidence to trust him. Some people want to wait until they get there. They say, well, when I get there, man, I'm going to be faithful and all that kind of stuff. That's not how it works in God's kingdom. Now's when you grow. Now's when you plant. That's when you learn to trust him. That's when he gives you confidence in him. I want you to do this. I want you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a minute. I want to give you a moment. My desire for you is that you discover the purpose that he has for you, the plan that he has for you, what it is that he wants to do in your life so that you can come to know that. Father, I love the people I go to church with. I'm just so grateful that you've called us together. And God, that we've come here to worship you because we love you. We've come here because we want to see people encounter Jesus, the people that we love. We're not trying to introduce them to a church. We want to introduce them to Jesus. We're not trying to introduce them to a religion. We want them to meet Jesus. And we want to be good to the place that we live in, the area that we live in, so that it's hard for people to go to hell from here because they experience the love of God from us on a regular basis. And God, I pray that for each person that's here, you help them to just, some people may not know, and I pray that you begin to speak to them in this moment. Some people may be on the verge of giving up because this season of feeling invisible is so hard. It's so hard, it's so difficult. It can feel so alone. You can feel so unimportant. So like you don't matter. God, I want them to know and remind them that you see them and that you love them. And they matter to you, and that to get everything that they need out of this season, they've got to trust your love for them and trust the fact that you do care about them. And as they're faithful in this invisible season, that they begin to learn to have confidence in you. And so, Father, I pray for that in their life right now. I'm gonna be quiet for just a minute and let you just spend a moment with God as you talk to him, especially for those of you that are in this moment, in this season, to talk to him. Let's just spend a moment with God.